Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 304. I am Stevie Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
And we're at the fair in 1903, apparently.
Graham Thickens.
Yeah, good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Tim and I guys stroll over, have a little cotton candy, and watch the diving donkey act. What do you think?
They still have that?
I have no idea.
I'm going to go play with the music maker. You know, in the big band?
Yeah, wasn't that a movie?
Yes.
No, it was the Music Man. Yeah, not the Music Maker.
Music Maker. Yeah, that was it.
Who the hell is the Music Maker?
That just degenerated. Let's try that again.
Yeah. Good morning.
We'll fix it in post.
Right. All right. Well, there aren't that many big Minnesota stories this week, are there?
Not really. I think that, I think the big thing of the week was the Apple Watch. And we've got a couple of comments from some local takes on that. But thanks to Julio.
Yeah.
But other than that, no, there really wasn't a lot going on this week.
Joe Souchere doesn't like anything to do with the Apple
you
Watch.
You kids get off my lawn.
Yeah. He is cranky.
Cranky dude. Yeah. He did the same thing with the iPad not long ago. It was 4, 5, 6 months ago when we commented on that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He called out how it's a waste of time that kids shouldn't be using iPads in schools or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But that was just more of the spending money on iPads issue. I think, less about the technology itself.
Yeah. Maybe. But he's definitely not an early adopter. I mean, let's get that clear.
Put that into perspective.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I was reading through the bullet points in Julio's article. And I was like, there's nothing that says you have to go buy an Apple Watch. This is not a law. So don't.
Right.
Don't freak out. It's a piece of new technology. It's a piece of new jewelry. So what? So if you don't want to buy it, don't buy it, for God's sake.
Yeah. Haters just come out of the woodwork. I mean,
And plus all the people that are opining about the Apple Watch, it's like, you've never even seen one. I mean, in person. So how can you possibly affect an opinion?
Yeah. The Verge did have a nice piece on the hands-on of the Apple Watch. I don't know. It really seemed very much on not being as intuitive as they'd like. It's like, well, I'm sure the iPhone was not intuitive when it first launched. I can't remember, to tell you the truth, but you have to learn what buttons make things work.
To me, this reminds me of the iPod. The original iPod came out. It was $500. It held, 1,000 songs?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 4 or 5 gigs, something like that. And, a lot of us saw it and we said, wow, that's really expensive for that, and that's not worth it. And we waited, and it got down to, I think the first iPod I bought was $250 or $300, whatever it was. But the price came down, the utility went up, and the same thing I think you're going to see happen with the Apple Watch. The first couple of iterations of it are going to be these expensive things that people, don't know what to do with. And then over time, we'll figure out what to do with them.
Yeah. Well, I agree with Tim, because I think that you look at the life cycle of just the iPod Nano, how many times that changed form, how small that got, and how that changed constantly. So it's the first one.
I'm looking forward to the Apple implant myself. I don't know about you guys, but I just want it in my wrist. I don't want to have to strap it on. Just have the dock inserted in there, and
Well, you remember the SNL parody on the iPod Nano, and it was like this invisible, Fred Armisen played Steve Jobs, and he was introducing the iPod invisible or something. He was holding up something you couldn't even see, or the iPod Nano, or I can't remember what they called it, but I'll see if I can find the.
I missed that. I'd like to look at that YouTube video.
Yeah, I'll find a link and stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, it's probably on Hulu if it's anywhere.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't allow all their stuff to be online, do they?
What did you think of that other story about American Public Media that wants to have FM radios in phones now.
Well, there are FM chips are already in phones. They're just not activated.
So. Yeah, that's kind of
odd. Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, why would you do that though? Because you can. I mean, I use the NPR streaming app often.
Well, there. Right.
You know, again, what if you don't have if you don't have any data?
Right. That's right? True. That's true.
You can't use it. So I think that's their point. They want more FM radios. So if everyone had an FM radio that worked when the cell networks went out, that would be better for radio stations.
Well, yeah, it's always good to have, you know, FM is, you know, radio is always looking for ways to staying relevant. And that, you know, that's one of the things. It's just like, let's turn all the phones into pocket transistor radios because, you know, that's what everybody wants.
But that's right.
I remember I had some sort of a Motorola years ago, an old Motorola flip phone that had an FM radio in it. And you had to have this bulky, you know, a headset that plugged into it. And it's like 28 pins or something like that to make the thing work. It was, you know, I thought it would be handy. I was in radio at the time. I thought it would be handy. Never used it. Just
really.
Well, you know, excuse me, the iHeartRadio app. I mean, we can already listen to a lot of radio, and I do all the time, but that's hardly all stations. But what about the, you know, NPR app and the MPR app? I mean, there's a ton of radio already available on your phone.
Well,
it all depends on the data network. Yeah.
Well,
I recall that FM radio didn't work real well simply because the antenna was built into the headset. So it was not, it didn't work all that well, as I recall, but it's justified to try and get, as many outlets as you can for your medium. I think that's a well-played sort of a thing. I don't know if it's really vital to the growth of radio, or what the adoption rate would be, but why not?
Well, see, what I love listening to is the 5.0 Radio Police Scanner app on my iPhone. and you know, people, especially my kids, tease me about it like crazy, except during the Boston Marathon bombing, I was listening to Boston. And
really?
You could hear this thing. You could hear stuff in real time. There's like 35,000 people listening concurrently. And so, that was kind of interesting. And I've listened to, you know, like Hennepin County Sheriff and stuff. And, you know, when stuff's going on and you hear about it, if you jump on the scanner, you can start to hear chatter. So it's kind of cool. But
and it's called
5.0 Radio Police Scanner. Yeah.
Is in Hawaii 5.0. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Anyway.
Book them, Steve-O.
Yeah.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you knew it.
Well, yeah. Somebody has to.
It's Dano. It's Dano, actually.
Oh, yeah. But but see, there's Steve
Borsch. I get it.
Yeah, there's no Dan Borsch, so that doesn't work.
There actually is a Dan Borsch.
Oh, well, he can book them too then.
And there's actually three Steve Borsches, one of whom unfortunately passed. But there's another one who's like 78 years old. He was an alderman in Philadelphia. Yeah.
Steve Borsch.
Does he have a podcast?
I don't think he does.
Well, that's good. We don't have a lot of redirects or mistaken searches then.
No, I don't think anybody's gonna confuse who we are.
There was an interesting piece out on Target, you know, because Target is going through such a lot of work right now trying to save its ass. But the investment in technology is in digital seems that's an insane amount of money to invest.
$1 billion.
Yeah.
And that includes all, you know, supply chain and IT and, you know, obviously all the infrastructure.
It's still a lot of money, though.
It is. Yeah.
They're throwing lots of money at it.
Have you perceived Target as being behind in the way it sells products?
They are. Well, you could make an argument that they are behind in their IT. Because they wrote most of their systems themselves, and
in BASIC, I believe.
Well, I don't know what they wrote them in, but if you go back and it's a complicated supply chain deal, and they have to, you know, go out and rejigger all of that so that they can do the inventories correctly to do omnichannel, which is, you know, the ability to sell products to customers however they want to buy them, in stores, online, you know, what have you. So all of that is expensive, and they're kind of playing catch up to everybody else at this point.
Yeah.
But $1 billion is just that's just a lot of money. And, you know, the one thing about this whole thing is the way that they're handling the layoffs, which hasn't been handled, you know, great, because you see all these stories in the press about like how they're screwing people that were moving to town for jobs, and that they rescinded their jobs at the last minute. And some people were, you know, had already quit their other jobs and they're moving and all this stuff. And it just makes them look bad.
Well, but you know, the same exact thing happened when Best Buy switched from their own internal IT department to Accenture. Remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
And of course the pendulum has swung back, but at any rate, there's a guy that moved into our neighborhood about a block and a half away. And he was a VP of IT, and he was there for 3 days. Oof, when they basically said, "Oops, sorry, we no longer have a position for you," and he had moved here from, I think, California.
Oh boy!
So, boy,
did they compensate him, because the lawyers are coming out of the woodwork on this one?
I think he was well taken care of, and he moved back. They sold the house, and it took about a year for the whole thing to unfold each way. But
apparently, Target's already said that. Relocation expenses that were paid to people whose offers were rescinded will not ask for those back.
Well, that's, you know, kind of them.
Well, they did that. Yeah. Especially if people have already relocated, they better not. But for those who were lucky enough not to have quite relocated yet, at least that's a nice little payment bonus that they get. But, you know, you could just imagine if they've already, obviously they've told their previous employer that they're leaving. I mean, what do? You go back to that employer and say, gee whiz, it's not working out. Would you take me back?
Yeah.
And a lot of employers at that point go, pound sand, yes, buddy.
Well, I'd be really curious about how, you know, having a contract and an agreement or employment agreement jibes with at will employment of someone. Because you can terminate somebody at will whenever you want. Yep. If you have an employment agreement, you got to pay them out, but you can do whatever. And I'm sure there's got to be settlements in there for people, especially anybody that's got an agreement.
Oh, sure.
It didn't sound like the ones that from the Fox story that those people, which were, you know, low positions, that they didn't have anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they just basically got screwed.
Yeah. It's a shame. But then, but then we have the story that Adam Bells did on the front page about how firms reach out to new ex-Target workers. It's like everybody's tripping all over each other to go hire these people, you know, so the recruiters are just licking their chops.
Right.
You know? So a lot of them won't have any problem at all, and they get a minimum of 15 weeks of severance, plus more, depending on how long they've been there. So a lot of these employees are going to have a really nice bonus, kind of, if they can go out and get a job right away. Or what many did at Best Buy was they started their own businesses after they got their big fat buyouts, you know, 4 or 5
years
ago.
Yeah, but you're talking about the high-end executives.
Not necessarily. No. A lot of mid-level people that took buyouts and... No, I'm not. No. I don't know. I'm thinking back to when Best Buy did that big buyout thing. It might have been like, what was that, 06, 07? Well, maybe it was 08, something like that. And, you know, people were leaving with a really nice nest egg that they could start a business with. And some of them did. And did Kathy Grayson do a story on this yet? She called me about a week ago. Who do you know that's left Best Buy or left Target or whatever and done their own thing? And I go, oh, I know a few people who've done that. So I gave her some names and stuff, but I don't know if she's hatched a story yet on people that landed on their feet quite nicely and are probably extremely happy they got the opportunity, you know? So, you know, you don't need to feel sorry for all these people. Some of them will do do really well, whether with new jobs or starting their own consulting firm or maybe even tech startups.
Yeah.
We'll see out of this. I'm sure we will.
Well, I think that the one department and target that seems to be relatively safe is the technology departments. So I don't know.
Yeah.
If there's going to be a lot of tech people on the street.
No, they've been ramping up in mobile big time, and you can't imagine they let any developers go.
Well, no, and then there was also an article, and I'll find it, but it was about all the headhunters that are going after target people.
Yep.
You know, certainly for other retailers, but also people with specific expertise that are on the street now. So hopefully there'll be, I mean, I'm sure that's not, you know, in the hundreds and hundreds of people. Hopefully people will be okay. At least in this market, you know, we're so doggone diverse in terms of our economy that, you know, unemployment has historically been pretty low, even in tough times. So
Yep.
Hopefully that'll help folks.
Oh yeah.
So, well, we should just briefly talk about something that I know will be something we should actually do in person so we can arm wrestle. The FCC released their full net neutrality report. It's a gigantic PDF with lots of words. And it is 400 pages. Yes, Graham wanted to point out to everyone that the word enforce appears more than 200 times.
Yep.
And the word "and" appears 1,974 times. No, I don't know.
The so. And te. Te appears a few times.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, so the whole thing is online, and we'll have a link in the show notes of the PDF if anyone wants to.
And
take
Tim
a peek.
Between now and next week, Tim is going to read the whole thing and tell us. Yep. I'm sure. Give us an unbiased view of
totally unbiased.
So well, the good news is they haven't established the podcast licenses yet. So
we're in good shape. They're not going to deal with podcast.
Well, yeah. it still is unclear. There's so many times that they refer to lawful content. It's not clear if podcasting is lawful content.
Of course it is.
So if it's not, then we've got a problem.
But it is, Tim, because remember, fair use is editorialization, and that's what we're doing. So even if we use something, but I did hear, though, that hyperlinking will be illegal going forward. So
No, they're going to charge you. They're going to charge you tax on it. God.
That's right.
Okay. Hyperlink tax, 25 cents a link.
Yeah. See, I just want to mention that just for shits and giggles, I am doing a search for the word "and" in this net neutrality report, and it's now it just stopped. 10,065 instances of the word "and." So, yep.
And we want more of your money.
Oh, would you stop? There's all no it is, taxing. All it, there. Okay. Where's the taxing in there?
Oh, it's gonna be. It's in there, I'm sure.
No, it's not.
All right, I'm going to read the whole darn thing, and I'm going to point out the places where you're wrong, Mr. Wilson.
Okay, fine.
Wrong.
295 times the word "enforce."
Oh, there you go. It's 300.
Almost.
How about tax?
The word "freedom" appears 68 times.
How about tax?
Well, who cares?
Tax.
This whole thing is not going to go into law, so it's not a big deal.
It is.
Tax appears 49 times.
This is an illegal grab of power. That's all it is.
The word "Graham" appears zero times.
Especially my spelling.
And "time liat" appears zero times. So I don't know.
Nice.
They did not listen to you, either one of you.
So, that's for sure. They didn't listen to a lot of people.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Well, and what's funny is, and I'll put this link in the show notes too, is David Lazarus at the LA Times pointed out in, you know, this FCC's net neutrality plan alarms critics, but it's nothing new. I put a little blurb in the show notes about one of the things he said, but then I went back and reread the article, and he talked about the regulation of the mobile industry. And in 93, there were 16 million cell phone users nationwide, and the FCC started regulating mobile voice service. But an inconvenient truth for critics of the FCC's internet plan is that there are currently more than 335 million mobile devices in use, and the wireless industry boasts that 97% of Americans can choose from at least three service providers. So that particular regulatory switch didn't tamper innovation, investment, or growth in the mobile industry. So,
well, there you go.
We'll just have to see.
That settles the issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe exactly. Jim won't be doing an examination.
All right.
Yeah, it's not worth it.
Yeah. Well, these are, I wanted just to segue for a second because we're talking about the internet, but segue to this article that I discovered on Nielsen finds 13% of homes with multiple over-the-top video subscriptions, meaning streaming subscriptions of some kind. And the one phrase in there, 41% of U.S. homes had access to a streaming video on demand service in the fourth quarter of 2014. So it is really, I mean, I swear I am talking to people like crazy who are, they're not cutting the cord, but they're adding these streaming services. And so they're not subscribing to, you know, all the movie services. You know, they might have HBO because they want to use the HBO app, or Showtime because they want to use the Showtime app, and you can use both if you're already a cable subscriber. But they're not subscribing to multiple movie channels. It's because they're instead using Netflix or Vudu or something else. And is that what you guys are experiencing too?
People are sick of the bundle thing, you know, how you're forced to take all this stuff you don't want. Yeah, I mean, yeah. With DirecTV, you know, we get so much, but we only watch, you know, maybe 1/10 of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the same with Comcast and all the cable companies. I mean, the cable bundle is a dying thing. And now we're seeing all this bite-sized stuff you can buy. But the problem is, by the time you do six or seven of them, you're paying what you paid cable anyway. You know, I mean, I only subscribe to one, Netflix. I don't subscribe to any of the others, but we have DirecTV too, so I don't need to.
Yeah. The only other thing we subscribe to, our daughter has Hulu, and so we share Hulu and she shares our Netflix, and yes,
or in principle that could happen. You would never do that, of course.
No, you can. We're in the same house. Okay. So yeah, you can absolutely do that. You can have it on multiple devices. You can have it on, I actually paid to have Netflix. I'm paying them more money so that they can, we can have more devices because, you know, people are complaining, oh, you know, I couldn't watch it on my phone. All right. So I don't know. I'm paying them $13 a month or something. I can have more devices, but it's great. But we also subscribe to Acorn TV, which is all British programming.
Oh yeah.
And, that's like $7 a month, but it's totally worth it to us. Cause I used to, find these shows and I would push them from my iPad up to the Apple TV, but they didn't have AirPlay capability. So I actually had to do mirroring of the screen and we'd be like 10 minutes into the show and the app would crash, or that we'd lose the connection or, you know, I mean, it was just horrible. It's a horrible experience. We were like, forget this. And actually, Tim, that's why I bought that Roku box, because I could get Acorn TV on the Roku box. I could get it on my TV, but I hate the Samsung TV interface. So
it's bad.
Yeah. And I really like the Roku. That's pretty cool.
Oh yeah. So. We got three of them, but at $69, I got to go get an Apple TV now, Steve.
Well, you should do the music thing
like you were talking about, if nothing else, right?
Well, the music thing, but also, your MacBook, you know, I often will, you know, like when, before we went to Rome, the four of us sat in the family room, and I had my MacBook mirrored to the TV through the Apple TV, and we were collaboratively deciding on what we wanted to go see. We were all looking at one laptop. Yep. And my wife and I do it sometimes when we're poking around looking for condos or townhouses, because we're toying strongly with the idea of downsizing. And so. Yeah.
Well, for $69, it's worth it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
At 99, I kept thinking, oh, do I want to buy one of these? I don't know, but now I will.
Yeah. What the heck? Well, I just want an iTunes unlimited subscription, like for $20 a month, where I can watch any TV show or movie I want.
You just won that?
No, I want it.
Oh, not, you want it. I thought you won it. I thought you won it. Sorry.
I wish. Yeah.
$20. There are even some free streaming apps. Like, I got one. Did you guys get that Pluto TV?
Yeah, Tim. Yeah. Tim, that was your cool thing one week, right?
It was.
Yeah. Yep. It's like 100 channels or something, but most of it's like music videos and stuff, isn't it? Or what have you found?
Well, that's where they all went. They left
there's
MTV
a there's a lot
there.
Of technology programming. It's what's interesting is it's you know, like linear TV, like broadcast is, but it's all internet videos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's presented just like a cable, you know, or the over the air. It's always running, mm-hmm. and they just program it for you. And there's some good technology stuff on there.
Yeah, and the app seems to work pretty well. I think I have it on the iPad only right now, but you're finding it's pretty good?
Yeah, no, I enjoy it just to catch up on some of the podcasts that I listen to. So,
and the price is sure right. I mean, it's a free app.
It is.
Yeah.
There you go.
Well, thank you, whoever put the next story in about I Spy, the CIA campaign to steal Apple's secrets. And this was very disturbing. So you everybody that's listening may know this or not, but Apple has a developer program called Xcode. And Xcode is... I mean, it's a programming language, right? Or is it the developer IDE? But it's really a software designer.
Yep.
Uses all the different languages and so forth. But they basically are working at manipulating Xcode to stick code in there so that they can entice all Mac applications to create a remote backdoor. Secretly embed an app developer's private key into all iOS applications so they could spies could impersonate the developer, force all iOS applications to send data from an iPhone or iPad back to a US intelligence listening post, and disable core security features on Apple devices. It's like, okay, so first they spy on Congress, and now they're doing all these backdoor stuff. I mean, honest to God, don't the intelligence agencies truly understand that they're going to destroy the U.S. tech industry? There's not another country on earth that's going to want to buy our stuff if it's compromised.
Yeah, I don't know if they could inject it into Xcode and have Apple not fix it, you know? I mean, I can't imagine Apple of all companies that would be, oh, okay, yeah, we'll allow you to put backdoors in our software.
Right.
So as soon as they find out, you know, if this has happened or not, they're going to certainly update Xcode so that there is no backdoor, you know?
I'm trying to figure out how there would be a backdoor in Xcode, because Xcode is the programming language, like Python, et cetera. So the programmer should be able to notice there's a line of code in here that shouldn't be in here.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how you would do that. And also, you know, Xcode is also transitioning to Swift. So,
right. But also there's things that happen in the, when you compile an app and it could be inserted then. So the developer actually wouldn't see it. Because it would be like, you know, doing a zip of a bunch of files. You're not actually seeing what's happening.
They're going to compile their app on their own device, so, or on their own computer.
Right.
And then upload it to Apple. So I don't know. Whatever. There's always that chance, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess I'm probably a little less worried about that than everybody else is, but hey.
Right, yeah. Right.
No, I'm not that worried either. I can't imagine that Apple, if they find it, and they're looking for it now, I would presume, that they're just going to lock it out. Yep. Right?
It's just the back and forth. Like this one guy says in the story, spy's going to spy.
Yeah. Yeah. Hayden's gonna hate. I was gonna spy.
Oh man.
He's gonna spy. And you know, and the companies, the publisher or the, you know, the Apples of the world are gonna, you know, defeat it. And it's just the back and forth. You know.
So did we cover off enough on the Big Apple event? Did we kind of talk that?
We kind of went.
I don't think we did.
No, we didn't. We glanced on it, but
kind of sloughed it off.
We did sort of slough it off.
Well, I know you wanted to talk about the article, the gold Apple Watch is perfect for douchebags. I know you wanted to talk about that.
It was great.
So what did you get? Is it just me or are these insanely long for absolutely no reason?
You mean the event?
The event or the articles?
The events. Oh my God.
Hour and a half was a little over the top. Yeah. I thought an hour is kind of what I budgeted, you know?
Yeah. I always kind of try to, you know, because it was very easy to deify Steve Jobs. But my question was, I don't recall his events being that incredibly boring to get to an ending that everybody knew was coming anyway. Right.
So. The good point. And, you know, kicking it off with Research Kit. It's like Leo Laporte, first thing he said is, with this.
Yeah.
You should always lead with your best stuff, and that's not your best stuff. And
I think it is one of the most amazing. Well, there's two things about Research Kit. One is it literally will leverage, you know, thousands, if not millions of people. So that's the first thing, people that want to participate. But the second thing is they freaking open sourced it. So there'll be Android versions and Windows Mobile versions and whatever. So they're basically saying, hey, look, this is what it is. And oh, by the way, anybody can use it. We're throwing it out there. And I think that is just incredibly profound.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, the amount of time that will be saved to do clinical studies now is amazing. I mean, it's going to be like 1/10 the time or less than that even to put a clinical study together. So, you know, there's no question that Tim Cook sees health as the big next big thing, you know. In fact, he even said that on that Jim Cramer. He surprised Jim Cramer by calling into his 10th anniversary show.
I just stuck a link in the show notes. Yeah,
that was great. And, and you know, Cramer says, so what, you know, what's the next big thing? The car, the home? And no, you know, Tim says, no, it's health. You know, health is huge. Yep. And so why not kick off with that, you know?
Yep, exactly.
So you guys still watch Cramer?
No, I saw the video. I
see the links. I can't stand watching the guy. He's just so hyper. He drives me crazy. You know, it's like, get on some decaf, dude. Yeah. You know?
All right. So how many of us are going to buy this Apple Watch?
Me.
So which one are you going to get?
Gold. No, kidding.
What? You're going to pay $17,000 for a gold one?
No, the cheapo. I'm going to go with the cheapo, I think. But know what? I don't even want the big one. I think the small one, I don't have a big wrist. I don't think I need the bigger one. I think the smaller, cheapo one, and I'm probably just going to go with a gray band or something, you know.
I'm going to get the watch, and I'm going to get the 42-millimeter version, the larger
the
version.
The big one?
Yeah.
So you're going to get the stainless steel one.
Right.
Oh, you're going to be spending upwards of $800 or $1,000 then.
Yeah, probably.
It depends on the band. Yeah, the band is the thing that really drives the cost up.
Yeah, I just want a sport band. I want something. The only downside is I don't know what the composite material is they're using for these sport bands, but you know what? These rubber sport type bands for every watch I've ever had stink.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just, you know, after you sweat, you know, you're working out and then you just, it's like, whoa.
Yeah. And
why are you smelling your watch band? That's what I,
cause you can smell it. if you're just sitting at your desk. I mean, it's like, whoa, see, what is that?
This is another reason not to exercise.
No. There you go.
Right.
Yeah, I don't intend to exercise with the damn thing. You know, yeah. What the hell?
Wait, when you get the sport one.
I'm with you. I want to look at the bands. I mean, that's the biggest thing to me. I mean, the watch is a no-brainer. I'm going to get it. But, oh, my God, there's so many band choices. I gotta go look at them and see them and make an appointment, apparently, to go into the store. And that ought to be crazy. How many people are going to be wanting to make appointments, you know?
I know. Well, the only thing about this that I keep thinking about is I remember getting the first iPhone and being blown away by it. Now I look at the first iPhone comparing to even the iPhone 4. And it was like, geez, if I just waited a couple of generations, of course I wouldn't have an unlimited AT&T plan, but anyway, so these things are going to change dramatically over the next couple of years.
Yeah. And that's an argument to get the cheap one, which I guess is one reason leaning in that direction. I'm going to try it. And, you know, in another year,
I'll just remember cheap is a relative term.
$349. Yeah. But what's it called? The sport.
The right? Watch Sport. Yep.
Watch Sport. Yeah.
Yep. But
that'll do me fine, man.
It'll be good. I'm looking forward to it. But yeah.
So three watches, because I can't get one because I'm an Android guy. So yeah. I'm not going to buy an iPhone just so I can use this watch.
Oh, come on.
Why don't you buy one of those knockoffs that are already being sold in China, and then you can at least look hip?
I just don't see how having this stuff is gonna make anything better. If I had a job where I traveled more or whatever, I'd probably feel differently. But I just don't see the need to have this information on your wrist.
I'll tell you one downside is, and this has already been written about, is it's going to be distracting a lot of people as they're driving.
Yeah, you know,
it's like, gee whiz. I mean,
that never happens.
No,
like it happens enough already. Now we need more distractions while you're driving. I mean, at least it's up in eye view on your steering wheel, or you know, you're assuming your wrist is attached to the hand that's on the wheel.
Well, I think what you should do is do our pal Mike O'Connor, the guy that
Tesla owner now.
Yes, now the Tesla owner. He bought a P85D. You know, so Mike's retired. Mike's done well selling domain names and having an ISP and all of that kind of stuff. And also, I think he deals Black Dog heroin on the side. No, I'm kidding. I'm teasing. Anyway, he bought a P85D and ordered it, and it took a while to come in. It came in, I think, last week. And he bought a dash cam for it. And so here he is doing videos now, talking on his dash cam as he's driving down this long driveway at the hobby farm. And
Wisconsin.
Yeah. So I would assume that Tesla will have some version of CarPlay so that you can tie all this stuff into that display so you're not distracted. And CarPlay is interesting because when we were at the auto show, we were looking at the new Honda Accord, the hybrid, and they're going to have another version this fall, and they're CarPlay. Company and CarPlay is really starting to take off. So
yes, it is.
I just think that the whole distraction thing will be lessened over time.
Good.
So are you thinking about an Accord hybrid there, son?
Yeah, we're starting to kick around some ideas. You know, these Priuses are great, but they're just not that comfortable. And both Michelle and I are kind of complaining about them, and she's tiny. You know, she's like 120 pounds dripping wet, maybe 100. I shouldn't even say this. Maybe 115. I don't know, honey, if you're listening.
Dear, anyway, I bet you're
85 pounds max.
That's right. You're a size one if you're anything. and yes, honey, those jeans look great.
Oh, love them.
Yeah. Anyway, so I forgot what I was saying.
The Honda Accord. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so we're just toying, we're kicking around the idea of different cars. So Prius is great, but anyway.
But anyway,
back to Apple. How many of us are going to get this 12-inch MacBook?
No.
When was the last time you said to yourself, you know, I wish I had a lighter notebook?
I wish I had a notebook with only one port.
Yeah. I want fewer ports.
Why the heck is it only one port? Why couldn't it be two?
Because it's tiny. Well, you know what? I look at the
one on one side and one on the other side.
Well, so not my wife, room.
my wife is the batteries.
My wife is the perfect customer for these because she travels 120 to 140,000 miles a year all over the world. And 2 pounds makes a huge difference.
Especially when you only weigh, you know,
85 pounds.
Exactly. Okay, so thank you for helping, guys. Okay. Anyway,
so you're saying we're not the market, but your wife is.
Yeah, because no, she needs to make presentations, and she needs that VGA connector, and she has USB external, so she'll need that one connector that has those three ports on it.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, and now she carries two dongles, so when she goes to make a presentation, she'll have two dongles. She'll have a Ethernet adapter dongle, and she'll have a mini display port to VGA for the projector. And so now she'll just need one dongle. Plus this thing's only a couple pounds. So she's like the perfect customer. But her friend Mary, who's out in California, she lives in Laguna Beach.
How much does she weigh, Steve?
Fun. You're such a card. Anyway,
145.
So she's talking to me about the new one. She thinks it's just awesome. And I said, yeah, but based on your needs and what you want to do, you know, you're the perfect candidate for the Retina 13.3-inch MacBook because it has two USB, two Thunderbolt, mini display port or HDMI out. It's got a micro SD so she can get her pictures off of there. And that's the one you need. You know, it's going to be a little bit more money, but like maybe $100. But she's not doing what Michelle does. She's not taking it all over the world. So the weight is not that much of an issue. She throws it in the back of her car and takes it to work. So I would vote for the ports personally.
Yeah. I think it's probably a taste of what's to come in the future with laptops. It's a little bit too much at this stage.
This was where that whole buildup drama time killing thing really came to light, and it was bad enough, you know, with the leading with research kit. But then the guy gets on there and starts talking about the way the keys work. It's like, oh my God, really?
It's a butterfly mechanism. Come on.
It's a butterfly mechanism. Yeah. We gotta come on.
Yeah, but you have to admit the videos were incredible of that stuff working. I mean, it's like, how the hell do they shoot that stuff? Is that all 3D, do you think? It's fake, or is that real mechanisms?
Yeah, I think it's got to be.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, I think that that's the one thing I think I would get in gold if I were to get that. I like
that's the one I'm getting.
Are you going to get one?
Oh, yeah. I'll be ordering on April 10th. I've been waiting. I'm ready to upgrade from my two-and-a-half-year-old MacBook Air, you know? This is absolutely what I've been waiting for, an excuse to get a new one. And I didn't want to buy from the existing, you know, line. I wanted to get what's new.
Color?
Gold. I'm going to, just for the heck of it, I'm going to do a different color. I'm sick of silver.
Well, then you're going to need a gold Apple Watch to match.
Yeah, it'll go well with a watch. Yeah.
Somebody tweeted at me right away. Oh, Curtis Juliber. Oh, are you going for the gold watch, Graham? And I sorry, but the gold 12-inch Retina MacBook will be as close as I get to gold.
Yeah, I can just see you talking to your bride and saying, you know, honey, you got to sell a hell of a lot more crafts so I can buy a 17,000 gold watch.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, she gets the hand-me-down of the old MacBook Air, so she'll be happy.
Oh, yeah, because that thing is still incredibly viable.
Oh yeah,
I mean you're good for apparently you're good for the next two operating upgrades.
Absolutely, but the 256 gig SSD drive just isn't big enough. So I'm going for the 512 and the new one. And
eight
gigs of RAM in that thing too.
I'll tell you what, this iMac with SSD. I'm sorry to keep saying this, but it has changed my life.
Oh yeah.
It is just, the whole entire boot sequence that used to take 4 to 5 minutes on my other 27-inch iMac takes maybe a minute.
Wow.
It's just, oh, it's like, wow.
Yep.
Yay.
SSDs are
So before we unleash the hounds, let's talk about GigaOhm. What happened there?
Yeah. What did happen?
The dangers of VC for media companies. God, it's a great thing we didn't go out and take that VC, you guys.
I know. $16 million.
So many offers we had.
Well, the only thing you can conclude, because there hasn't been a lot of inside information on this.
No.
That it just was a horrible management foul up, you know?
Yeah. What they're saying is that whoever took over after Ohm left, obviously didn't do a very good job. I mean, it's a bunch of great journalists, but it's like the management savvy just wasn't there, and the lenders took it over and apparently shocked the employees. I mean, I don't know that a lot of them saw this coming, but Tom Crazet, the managing editor, had left a week or two prior.
Yeah.
So you have to assume he knew something was coming. But yeah, that story, when that broke, it's like everybody went, what the hell? You know?
Well, and, you know, I was trying to read between the lines on a lot of this stuff because nobody's really come out and said exactly why. But I think to your point, it was after the new management, but also they were really spending a lot of resources on that whole research arm because they've got a, on GigaOhm, they had that login where you could log in and get access to all the membership content. And studies, and there were different membership levels, so they were selling different content to different people. You'd have access to different things, and it just didn't, you know, people weren't buying off on it.
No, they couldn't sell enough memberships, and their events business, and they do great events. And as you know, I went to their structured data event a year ago in New York City, and I was tempted to go again. And, you know, they're pounding me with emails all the time. And my first tweet was, you know, maybe you want to reconsider registering for structured data, which is next week in New York, because GigaOhm just shut down, you know. And it's like, no one's come out and said, will they pull that event off? They have hundreds of people who paid money. They have a bunch of big speakers. You know, what's going to happen? I'm dying to know. But they do excellent events, and their regular structure event is in June in San Francisco, and that's got a fantastic lineup of speakers. You know, so you wonder, is somebody going to take over just the events business? I don't know. But that's not very saleable, I wouldn't think.
Yeah.
But it's a shame. I mean, obviously, Ohm and his people are just, you know, fantastic writers. They're all going to land on their feet somewhere.
Oh, easily. Yep.
Did you see that Stacey Higginbotham said, whoop, I'm switching over to Medium, and she's just writing over there now. You know, she has no trouble finding a place to write.
She's very good.
Oh, God, she's fantastic. Yep. Yeah, out of Austin, Texas. And, of course, she always appears at all these events and does a great job on stage, too. So,
yep.
I mean, they're great people, and they'll land. They'll all land in good places.
Absolutely.
But nonetheless, it was a shocker. I mean, you know, Kara Swisher was writing about it at like 12:30 a.m., you know. It surprised a heck of a lot of people. Did you see that Read Write? You know, Owen Thomas now runs. Have you guys followed what happened with Read Write?
No, you they know, sold. They sold. Richard McManus sold it.
Yeah, right? To Say Media.
Yeah.
And then they dumped it because Say couldn't make any money off of it. And did you see who picked it up?
Mm-mm.
Wearable World.
Oh, God.
Reg Snodgrass, who I know is suddenly CEO of Read Write. It's like, what the heck? And so he's taken it over to try to save it as sort of a subset of Wearable World, which is a big event and content site. And Owen Thomas is still editor in chief, who's great. I mean, I think he does wonderful stuff. But he put out a post: should we crowdfund Read Write in the wake of this GigaOhm thing? They're all, you know, thinking, oh my God. There, but for the grace of God, go we, you know?
Yeah.
And maybe how are we going to raise money to keep this thing going, you know? Because obviously advertising isn't doing it for them. And I don't even think they do much in the way of events. They might have played with that. But yeah. And I said, heck yeah, do it. I'd pay, you know, but will enough people pay? I don't know.
Well, I think people are disinclined to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the,
but early adopters and tech people, you know, and I don't know.
There's so much competition out there. So yeah. GigaOm shutters and yeah, there's a lot of good writers and they're going to show up other places, but it, you know, people just adapt and they move on to the next place. I think this is a trend we're going to see, and places like The Verge, I think, are very vulnerable because they're burning through lots of venture capital, mm-hmm. building out, and they've got, you know, lots of people in New York, and it's just, that's just not a sustainable business.
Right.
So.
Well, the New York, you know, New York's the center of publishing and everything else. And yeah, and maybe they can keep it going there. But yeah, you wonder about some of these other smaller industry or outlets. I mean, Mashable raised, they raised $7 million a while back too. And, you know, maybe they can keep it going, but... you know, the management has to be there and they have to know how to spend and, you know, mm-hmm. and these writers, you know, they don't make that much. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know what they were making at
GigaOm. They don't make anything. They don't make anything.
No. But the, you know, the salaries of these writers are probably not going up.
Yeah. Hey, we're a little bit behind on time.
Yeah,
so sorry to be the time cop, but,
all right.
Wow, we're way behind on time. What happened there?
Well, Phil opened the corral up a while ago.
He did, and?
Yeah, I
think so.
It is time for Steve's security tip of the week.
All right.
And the horses have all left.
They have.
What the hell? Why don't you leave the damn horses alone?
Because the chipmunks were lonely. All right, so here's my security tip of the week.
Update your WordPress.
Update your WordPress. you know, do you run WordPress? Well, because 60 million websites do, and actually 23.3% of the top million websites run WordPress. And here's why I'm making this my tip about this. I had a client this week who called me frantically saying that they were shut down by Google because they got this splash screen that this site has malware and so on, and could you please help? So we came in and we fixed the site, and they didn't have a backup. I actually had an old backup, so we were able to at least get them back and running. And they had not done updates since October of last year. And there were 22 plugins that needed updating, and they were on version 3.9 something of WordPress, and WordPress is up to 4.1. So there were several attack vectors, including WordPress SEO by Yoast, which is one of the most popular plugins. There's like 30,000 plugins for WordPress. And this one by Yoast is one that does search engine optimization stuff and keywording and all that. And his plugin had a SQL injection problem, and so all sorts of people, millions of sites were affected. So all the ones that we're managing, we were able to update immediately. But anybody that's not updating or certainly not backing up their site are extremely vulnerable, especially if they have multiple sites on their server, because then every one of them can get attacked. So please run your updates. Just set a calendar, recurring calendar event that, you know, every Friday morning, at least log into your site, because the more plugins you have, the more frequently they need updating. And so that's my tip of the week.
Nice tip.
Yes, it is. And there's no automatic updating like Apple lets you do on iDevices now, huh?
Well, it's moving in that direction. There are some. Where you can set WordPress to automatically update. If you're running the Jetpack plugin, there's some auto update stuff. But you know, the kicker with some of the updates is you need to look at what they're saying about what's getting updated, because often developers will put warnings in there. If you're running this version 1.8.9 and you want to upgrade to 2.0, it will not work. You have to, you know, deactivate the old plugin and then run this updater and then upgrade the plugin and do it manually. You know, so they'll have instructions on how to do it. So you can't just set stuff like this up to automatically update everything. And
sounds like a a lot of complicated stuff. Is it? But if you're hosted with somebody who's doing it right, you're okay, right? You don't have to worry about this
right
for your own individual site. Either that or it's an argument to go on WordPress.com instead of hosting your own.
That right? or one of the WordPress site management.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Media Temple's got one. Bluehost has one. We offer at Innovate Press, we offer a management service where we back stuff up and update everything and keep it 100% up to date. Like, you know, the moment stuff comes out every single day, we're monitoring it, but, and backing up the sites in total and the databases, but that's the kind of stuff you need. So you don't even have to worry about it.
You're my man for my WordPress blog. Whenever I get there.
No, you're just a big talker. You're not going to do anything. You're going to stay at TypeAd forever.
No. Yeah, the last man standing on TypeAd.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I think we should move to the cool thing of the week.
Me too. You start then, Graham, since you brought it up.
Oh my God. Well, you know, speaking of Apple Watch, of course, which we did, I can't wait to get the Flipboard app on my watch. And I also can't wait to get the Twitter app, because for content curators, oh, wow, are we going to have fun with that?
Huh.
So that's my cool thing of the week.
Aren't you worried, though, in all seriousness, about small children tugging at mommy's sleeve saying, "Mommy, what is that weird man doing with his face on his watch? Why is he not watching where he's going? He's looking at his watch." Right.
Walking down the street looking at my watch.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's looking at the time a lot.
Oh, that's right.
He's curating content, honey. So that's my thing.
Okay.
I do have a close second, but I'll leave that
all right
until you do your close second.
Okay. Phil.
My gadget. It is the Siva Cycle, the bicycle-powered charger.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, so you strap this bad boy to the rear sprocket of your bike and charge your devices while you're riding.
Well, we know a lot of people that ride, like Justin Grammons rides to work on his
Does
bike.
He?
Yeah.
When did he start doing that?
Posted yesterday or the day before that he rode to work for the first time of the year, and he's never done it so early. So
for him.
Yeah.
Good for him. So, yeah, I thought that was right.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Tim?
Well, I was poking around Kickstarter, and I've, from time to time, I look to see what's happening in the Minnesota kickstarting arena, and I came across this Stacker 3D commercial printer. Have you seen this, Steve?
No.
So I know you follow 3D printing, but this is a Minneapolis company, and it's a commercial grade 3D printer. You can print up to 4 parts at once, and their claim to fame is this is apparently very affordable, and they make a model that's $7,500, and they keep going down to $4,000 just about, and they've sold quite a few of them in their Kickstarter, and they blew past their goal of $100,000 quite quickly, so they've got a couple of weeks to go, and it's they're at $253,000 of backer on a $100,000 goal. So this will definitely get funded.
So who's the team?
This is interesting that there's only 117 backers at that level. So there's big money in this one.
Yeah, there is, because you know, they're really getting a lot per you know, per user here or per backer. And I don't know who the team is. This is a brand new company, and I've never heard of them before.
Yeah, Stacker3D.com. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's just bizarre, because it drives me crazy when you see a really great service and you're like, okay, well, who are the humans?
Yeah.
And you can't figure it out.
They're in Plymouth.
Well, yeah, they're in Plymouth, so you could drive up to their office, knock on the door, and go, "Okay, who are you?
Who are you guys?
Who are you?
What the hell? There's nothing on your website. We can't figure out who you are."
Yeah, and it's like, "Who are you? And can you deliver on time?" There are the big questions. You know, it's just what any VC goes through. You know, they're betting on the team more than anything else.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Therein lies the danger on Kickstarter.
Huh. That is cool.
Anyway,
it is. Yeah. It's a cool thing. Cool page.
Well, so my cool thing of the week is Also a Kickstarter project, which, by the way, got funded fully on Thursday. So they've already broken through like in 3 days or 4 days. It's Back in Time. It's a new documentary about the Back to the Future movies. Nice. And I got to tell you, I watched the video and it was just, it's like, I'm back in this bad boy right now. And I forget what level I paid at. I can get the streaming, get the download, but there's DVD versions and there's Blu-ray versions you can get and all of that. They're going to be done this fall. But they have interviews with, you know, Doc and Michael J. Fox and all the, you know, the director, I forget what his name is now. But it's just, it really looked fun. And if, so if you like the movies, if you're a fan of the movies, this is one of those you just have to get. So,
oh, yeah.
Robert Zemeckis, by the way, he also made a movie called Forrest Gump. You might have heard about it.
Never heard of it.
Forrest Gump. Yeah. Is that the one about the forests, the trees, or the... No, never mind. No. I know. I couldn't think of anything funny. Okay. So I had a close second, though. It's a vintage-inspired map of all the underwater cables in the world that connect the internet. Oh, and I just thought it was just so cool that I had to do a close second. I couldn't save it till next week. So,
That does sound cool. And that's kind of, I watched a movie last night on Netflix that I had to slip in as my close second. Something Ventured, themovie.com. Was fantastic about how the VC industry got started.
Oh, really?
Just fascinating interviews with the guys who started it all. You know,
and this is on Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been out a couple of years. It's a really, really well done documentary. So I'd encourage anyone interested in the VC industry and how Silicon Valley really got started.
You know, that's very cool.
It is. It captures the history better than anything else I've ever seen.
Wow. All right. Well, upcoming events, we've covered pretty much most of this stuff, but I want to mention that this Thursday, March 19th, is the Internet of Things event, IoT Fuse. And we're like right now close to 90% full, so there's still some spots available. There's something else about mobile technology coming.
March. Yep. A week from then, on the 26th of March, we have a nice full agenda. We have a speaker from Target. So, folks from, we've keynotes from BuzzFeed, Space 150, and a keynote on mindfulness by a gentleman by the name of Alex Haley. So it's going to be a great event. Tickets are on sale now. The tickets price will go up next week. So we have a week left to get in at not the early bird price, but at least the lower price. So we'd love to have you pick up tickets for that. And also, DevFest is coming up. And I wonder, do we not have that on our events calendar?
No, we don't.
I don't think we do. No.
Stick it on there.
Google Developer Group's DevFest, which is a week from today, as a matter of fact. So you might want to check that out as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. That's a really is a nice conference hold over there at the Schultz Hall there in
downtown Minneapolis,
St. Thomas campus. So yes, do check that out.
And while we've been podcasting, only I don't know, half an hour ago or so, the mini bar people sent out the call for sessions for mini bar 10.
Yeah.
And as of right now, there are no sessions for mini bar 10. So go and add a session.
Ah, cool.
Okay.
Sounds
good.
That'll
be a good one.
Lots going on, so we'll talk about all of these things next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast.
Yeah. Go out and enjoy the great weather.
You bet. Take care.
Have a good one, guys.
See ya.
Yep.